something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm gonna stay in this town. I'm gonna live in this town. I'm gonna live in Chicago, the greatest place around.
The Cubs and Sox are off for the winter, but inside the clubhouse starts the hot stove discussion now. Inside the clubhouse takes a look at which free agents and trades the Cubs and Sox should explore. Will they trade for a top pitcher or player? Is free agency the way the North and South Siders go? You help them make the call. 312-644-6767.
Flaherty's pitch.
Strikes out swinging. Another nasty knuckle curve from Flaherty. Back-to-back punch outs to begin the fifth.
That was game one starter for the Los Angeles Dodgers last night in the World Series. Jack Flaherty, who's been a very integral piece of that rotation in the second half since coming over for the Tigers at the deadline. He went 5 1/3 last night with 6 strikeouts. He's going to be a free agent. I think he has helped his cause, Bruce, with what he's done. He had to basically sign a one-year prove-it deal. He did that with the Tigers. He was good with Detroit. The funny thing is, Detroit made a run without him. He goes to the Dodgers. Now he's a game one starter in the World Series. He's had a lot of success in the past. He's had some injuries in the past. Does he make sense for the Chicago Cubs? Certainly no stranger to the NL Central, coming from the Cardinals. You know, we're going to talk about what the contract looks like. Does he make sense for the Cubs? What do you think? Is it their most important piece that they need to get them to that 91 plateau?
I'm a pitching guy. Okay, so we all know that the Cubs need a power bat in the middle of their lineup somewhere, and they might need two when Bellinger decides he's taken off. But for me, I do not count on the pitching excellence that the Cubs starting rotation gave all the way through again next year. So for me, it's about solidifying the pitching staff, getting a guy like Flaherty that might be considered a middle range solution to the idea that Corbin Burns is going to get 7 years and $250 million. Okay. I'm not into lengthy contracts for pitchers. The Cubs have had a few that worked out. In particular, John Lester was something that worked out tremendously well. Oh. And a franchise changer for the Chicago Cubs. That worked out well. Is Flaherty that guy for the Cubs now? Can he be brought in, be at the top of the rotation with Imanaga and Steele and make one of the most formidable pitching staffs in the National League?
Yeah, so you have Steele and Imanaga, you also Jameson Taillon, and if you add Flaherty to it, you're right. I mean, that's a stud 1-4, and I do believe like this type of contract. I always love these projected contract articles, and I found The Athletic recently came up with the top 45 free agents and what their projected contracts are. And let's just use this as our parameters. 3 years, $68 million. Is that in your budget? It should be for the Cubs, right? 3 years, $68 million seems like it's a.
I think they have some precedent on that. You know, they gave they gave Taillon a little bit more. They gave 4 years, yep. Okay. But the AAV is less, okay. What was Stroman's? 3 years, $60+ million, right?
Mm-hmm.
65. I think. The Imanaga contract helps him out from a perspective of he hasn't killed us. We have options with him. Money wise, he hasn't killed us. He was arguably the best free agent pitcher signing last year. I don't know if you can argue about it. He was the best.
Yeah, you cannot argue about it.
And for him to be making the money that he is, which is under $20 million a year, I think you can talk yourself into a 3-year deal for Flaherty. Is he going to get more years? I don't know.
Well, creativity in these contracts now, as we know, with opt outs and opt ins, that could play if somebody says we'll give you three for 68 with two back end options to get you closer to 100.
I think ownership and baseball general managers have done a good job of refocusing free agents on getting the money up front. Okay.
Agreed.
So it's more getting to NFL contracts of we pay up front, you get hurt in the second or third year, you don't get paid, but you've already made a lot of money. In baseball, you know, saving the general manager's butt from making a mistake on a 7-year deal for a pitcher is pretty important. You just don't know how long these arms are going to last, no matter how good they've been in the past. Recent vintage of Verlander and Scherzer, yeah, seeing them making $43 million a year the last couple of years and struggling to pitch 15 or 20 games, not being the same version of themselves. You know, it's just helped the, I think, the rhetoric to talking about the fact that 3-year deal, get your money, worry about the long-term deal some other time. You're going to walk away here with door number two, which is $60 million real dollars. And I think you and your family will get by.
Yeah, I think they will too. I mean, you look at the Dodgers. They had two pitchers throw 100 innings this year, and both are injured now. They're not even available for them now. It's Stone and Glasnow. So, I mean, to your point about the best ability is availability, right? And the $40 million pitcher that's giving you 15 to 20 starts, I'm with you. I think the front-loaded, here's your money. AAV seems to be a bigger doesn't that seem to be a bigger parameter for you now? Like, the players care about AAV and where they rank in that.
They do. And you know, the agents worry about the age, okay? Are you going to be 29 or 30? If you're 30, they're starting to look at you like you're too old for a 3 or 4 year contract. If you're 28 or 29, for instance, going back to Bellinger, they'll play at 29, okay? If he waits till he's 30 next year and opts out, it's a different dynamic in people's minds. Right now, he's still considered young at 29. You give him a 4-year deal. As you said, the average out there is probably somewhere around $25, $26 million a year for a guy that plays four positions, runs the bases well, left-handed power hitter. I think people can relate to that type of contract. Now, can the Cubs relate to that contract for Bellinger? I don't know.
312-644-6767 is our phone number. I think in order to sign and project a guy like Jack Flaherty on the Cubs, you need to tell me what the other needs and what they look like first. So we've been talking ad nauseum about the impact bat. We know that Bellinger's an impact bat, but I think you need almost a bigger impact bat and Cody Bellinger. To me, like, the Cubs need a whether it's a Vlad Guerrero or somebody like that in the middle of their lineup that's protected by other star players. Now, no one's going to have Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman roll out there like the Dodgers do, but you look at Aaron Judge, Juan Soto. You know, that's, again, murderer's row. The Cubs don't have that. You know?
Is Bush a growing impact player at 27? After his first year in the major leagues last year, is he projected now to be 25 to 30, 85 to 100? You know, is he going to be that player?
You need to know.
Okay,
you need to know.
You and I need to know, but they need to be able to project their own players.
And
right?
Then we did Chicago Bound last week with Josh Hader. I mean, we talked 26 blown saves. If Jack Flaherty's giving you 6 innings a start, but you can't close the deal, then what's the point of signing Jack Flaherty?
Right.
So the Cubs need to prioritize, and obviously they're doing this, but their priorities, I don't think Jack Flaherty, to me, is 1 or 2. Now, he's a really nice 3 if you address the other 2, Bruce. He's a perfect 3.
Well, but your thinking is the Cubs starting pitching is going to be the same or better. Okay. I don't think that way. I don't think that they're necessarily going to be all healthy, all as good, you know, that they're all going to be with ERAs in the low 3s or in the case of Imanaga, you know, the upper 2s. They have the potential to do that, but if, you know, Bruce Levine, the general manager, is not counting on that. I'm counting on, I had young pitchers, they were coming through my system, they were looking good. Brown has those 7 shutout innings against Milwaukee in late May. And then within two outings after that, he's done for the year with a mess in his shoulder. Wicks goes on the IL twice during the year. Okay. Wisniewski, is he a starter? Is he a reliever? He gets hurt as well. So the answer isn't necessarily Cade Horton again,
right,
for the third year in a row, who is arguably the best pitcher in their organization as far as pound for pound and ability, but he hasn't been able to make it out on the field long enough to even stretch out and consider him being a starting pitcher on your big league staff 28 or 30 times. So with that in mind, starting pitching for me is number one. That's the number. And again, I don't know that that's Hoyer's. I don't know that that's a Carter Hawkins. I don't know that's where they're looking. But again, I solidify what's already really good on my team. That's starting pitching. So I'm still a starting pitching guy, even though this is the era of, hey, we can just start our bullpen and we'll get through with five relievers today.
We got the text lines on fire right now. The 708 Cubs need to call Tampa about McClanahan, who should be fully healthy. The 331, isn't Flaherty just a slightly better version of Tyone? The 312, Council was platooning Patrick Wisdom for Michael Bush. Doesn't happen if Bush is some great phenom. Mike from Willow Springs also has some thoughts. What's going on, Mike? Welcome to Inside the Clubhouse.
Guys, thanks for taking my call. Bruce, longtime listener, sometime caller, talked to you before. I'm going to mirror what you said and do a little bit of a deeper dive real quick. I'm going to pass on Corbin Burns, even though they got a relationship because of the price. You said a couple, 3 weeks ago with Mike Rizzo, you know, Juan Soto's not walking through the door. And Rizzo said something very interesting, which I wholeheartedly agree with. You have to believe every day you have a chance to win. I'd love to see the Cubs' record out of the 4 and 5 slots this past year. It was not good. So here's my idea to make Ricketts happy and to win. Max Fried, Nick Pivetta, and Jeff Hoffman. And I've done a lot of digging to come up with those three. I just didn't pull them out of a hat. Fried is going to be probably the most expensive out of the three. Pivetta is affordable, but he's an under-the-radar stud. And Jeff Hoffman's a stud closer. With those three, Tyon, Imanaga, and Steele, and you add those two, you have a chance to win every day. Even with the lineup, like you said, you already have players at every position. And God help us, we really need Bellinger to opt back in. But beside that, where are you going with the offense?
Right.
I mean, it is what it is. So you shore up where you were weak. And Horton and Brown had busted years, no offense. And Wisniewski and Wick, come on. And Assad, let's be real. But and again, this would make the Ricketts, you're not breaking the bank with those three. And you could throw Flaherty in there, but I like Pivetta. And obviously, Freed's not going back to Atlanta. So I think it's a win-win. You got five quality. You got a chance to win every day.
Right. I'm with you. And thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Ryan, when you look at, do you have a super stud as a starting pitcher? No, you don't. But I like just what he said. I like the idea I have five quality pitchers, okay? Mm-hmm. And the odds of them all staying healthy all year, very remote, okay? Very remote. Two of them are going to get hurt. Two of them are going to probably give you 15 to 20 starts rather than 30 if you're lucky and they're not out for the whole year. So, again, pitching depth, that's where I'm at. Again, it's not sexy. As he points out, they have good position players. They're not great players, okay? Well, some of the young players come up from the minor leagues and have an impact right away. We heard about Nico Horner's injury. We don't know after surgery to his hand whether he's going to be available for the first month of the season. We'll have to see what his recovery is like, but it's going to be at least 4 months. And the idea that these good players in the minor leagues can be impactful on the 2025 Cubs might be a reality. Again, I'm a pitching guy. I believe in the strength in numbers as far as good pitching, not great. And I just look at the Milwaukee Brewers and I say, how did the Milwaukee Brewers win games? You know, how did, as an organization, how do they keep coming up with players that can play. How many superstars are on the Milwaukee Brewers?
None.
Yeah. When their left fielder comes back, he's not a superstar anymore. He's still a good player. When you talk about Willy Adames, he's probably not coming back. He's going to be
a big-time free agent.
He's going to make money somewhere else.
$150 million, probably.
The Brewers are, an example of a great organization that keeps pumping out good players, and that the group, the coaches and the manager continue to get the very best out of them. At one point, it was Council. I think if you give Council the same type of players like they have right now with the Cubs and enough pitching, that he'll be the manager you want him to be.
You need 8 to 9 pitchers. So I will buy what you're selling with Jack Flaherty as long as you're telling me it's not the only thing that I'm buying.
Right.
To the caller's point, the Cubs were 15-14 when Javier Assad pitched. They were 11-18 when Kyle Hendricks pitched. So we're calling those guys the 4-5. The Cubs were 6 games under when those two took the mound. That matters. I mean, you want that to be closer to 500. Certainly anything over 500 is a bonus, but you need that number not to impact you where you're playing from behind when your 4-5 starters are on the hill, Bruce.
Yeah, well, you'd like them all to be 23-6 like Imanaga was.
Yeah.
Okay. That would be nice, but it's not going to be that way.
You can't be too top heavy. You need to have consistency. You want 23-6, but all the way down, you want it to look 5-6 games over 500, certainly 500, or maybe your 5 is, 13-15 to get you back to the top again.
The Cubs are going to have anywhere from $20 to $40 million, maybe $50 million available, depending on what Bellinger does. What do you want them to do with that money? How do you want them to make trades? These are the things that are going to be answered relatively soon here as the World Series ends. And we find out what Cody Bellinger is doing. Is he opting out like we think he is, or staying?
These are the texts and calls that I love. 312, what have the Brewers won? And this goes back to our conversation, Bruce, about what's more
they've
important.
They've won our admiration.
Have they played in October?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't that matter?
Yeah.
The texter is saying,
gee, they never get by the first round. They're out. Okay.
Fine.
I
get me to the first round.
I'm a big fan of the Atlanta Braves and the New York Yankees in the late 90s and into the 20s, 2000s rather, where you go to the playoffs 14 years in a row. Okay. The Braves only won one World Series. They went to 5, okay? If you went to 5 World Series, are you successful even though you lost 4 of them? I'd say it's great success. Okay?
Absolutely. Right? Were the Buffalo Bills losing 3 straight Super Bowls successful?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
They missed a kick. It
4,
went right.
I think it was.
Well, I mean, so there you go.
Yeah.
They don't have a trophy at the end of the day.
They had a great coach. They had great players. They're all in the Hall of Fame.
And they were all... they were in position at the end of the day to be there.
I do understand that in our era now, winning the last game is still the only thing that matters. But it's really not, right? What really matters is having a good team on the field every day.
I'd like to be in position to be the team that wins the last game.
Right, and competing and getting in the playoffs and moving forward, okay? Again, we haven't had a Chicago team move forward in the playoffs here since 2017. So it's been a while.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like PTSD. I mean, we don't even have teams that can hit home runs. The White Sox, they hit 133 homers, and obviously dead last. The Cubs hit 170. I know Wrigley Field played small, but other people played there too. And the Cubs, you can't be in the bottom 10 of the league year in and year out and say that you're going to be in the conversation to win it at the end. I mean, look at the teams that are in that conversation. With the exception of the Tigers, no one else is there. The postseason teams hit the ball out of the ballpark.
You're talking about economics?
Yeah, if the Cubs have a $240 million payroll, they should be in the playoffs. I mean, that's just, so you got to spend the money wisely.
And they always talk that way. Talking about intelligent spending.
Well, it's not been intelligent spending.
Well, they have good players.
but they don't have great players.
True.
They don't have guys. We're not watching highlights that we've been watching all morning. The guys rounding the bases, both for New York and L.A. And this 847 texter brings up a great point that we talked about, I think, last week. What about packaging a deal for Crochet and Robert? I think the Cubs have to get creative in the trade front, Bruce. I think they got to trade. You got to make smart trades from your seven top 100 prospects.
Vladdy Guerrero Jr.
And you're extending him then too, right?
You have to. You have to be able to extend him since he only has 1 year left.
And the Nico Horner injury might impact some of the trades you were thinking about.
Sure, sure. I mean, do the Cubs lack superstars? Yes. Do they lack good players? No.
No.
They have good players. Are good players wanted by other teams, especially teams looking at players who are not making a ton of money? Yes. Yes, they are. You can go back, and I think the trade market over the next 5 or 10 years is going to be the way to go about, you know, making your team better. I don't think that free agency any longer is going to be lengthy for players. I think that teams are going to tie up their own players and keep them longer. It's going to be difficult to change the dynamic of your franchise unless you have good players available for your big league team and for the ability to trade for other people's.
708, Cubs haven't developed stars through their system. Biggest reason they fell behind since 2016. I don't know if it's the biggest reason, but they definitely haven't developed those same stars from that 2016 run for sure. So we are going to talk to White Sox assistant general manager, Jin Wong, on the other side of the break. We have plenty to discuss with the White Sox and their managerial search and how they're going to approach free agency after a season where they finished 80 games under 500. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Time to talk some White Sox. And for that, we go back to the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sportsbook, Bruce.
Assistant general manager of the Chicago White Sox and a longtime friend of mine, and hopefully a friend of yours for the future,
I hope,
Ryan.
So.
Jin Wong, nice enough to take some time out on a Saturday morning to join us on Inside the Clubhouse. Jin, welcome in and good morning.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. Morning.
Yeah, yeah. First, your reflections on last night, just as a baseball fan, also somebody that works in the business for so many years like you've had, just your reaction to a game like that against these two powerhouses.
Yeah, wow. That's the only word I really had last night. Amazing postseason. Every postseason seems to be amazing and have these moments that make the game so special. And bring us back to those moments where, you know, we're like Freddie Freeman said, we're in our backyard. We dream of these types of moments and to be put in those situations and to come through, just amazing.
I guess we'll get right to it. I mean, I know you can't speak for Chris Getz, but obviously you guys are in the midst of hiring a manager and you're not going to share all of that with us right now. But it's right. how much of that time is it taking you guys to go through some of these interviews and defining, you know, again, as a media person, Ryan, a media person, you know, we try to set the scenario about what is being looked for by the Chicago White Sox when they hire this next manager. Sure. So maybe you can help us down that road a little bit.
Yeah, I think it is the most important decision that we're going to make, frankly, and it is the person that's going to lead our team on the field. We are looking for a partner. Chris is looking for a partner in the game. And there's an exhaustive list of characteristics that we're looking from. I mean, anything from being a natural leader, someone that can establish a winning culture, obviously represent the org in a profound way. But also we're looking for a collaborator, you know, somebody that's an exceptional communicator, a motivator, someone that's going to be relentless with the fundamentals, someone that can be a unifier with the coaches, players, and staff. And I think guys that When we think of the traditional word of field manager, we think of someone that can pull the right levers at the right moments of the game, right? But I think the more we get into it, and we find out that a manager is really more than that, someone that can manage personalities, someone that can manage support staff, coaches, players to really realize their potential. And I think that's really what we're looking for.
I mean, there's only 30 of these jobs, as we know, and you talked about having to get it right. What's the excitement level, not just from you guys in the front office about what's coming, but what are you selling to these managerial candidates about why they should be excited about being the manager of the Chicago White Sox?
I think there's multiple reasons for that, obviously, from the market, a wonderful market in Chicago. I'm new to this market, the city itself, and the surrounding neighborhoods, the fan base, the history of the organization. Not only that, owner that is a baseball man through and through, front office that is full of baseball people that have played the game at the major league level, and Chris and Josh Barfield that know how difficult it is to play the game, and also to our system, our players, right? We feel we have depth in starting pitching, and that's the currency of the game. It always will be. And we feel like we have good depth at that position. Certainly, it's very tenuous, right? Pitchers still have to perform, stay healthy, and continue to develop, but we feel we do have depth in that area.
Jin, I don't like to go into history. You know, everyone knows that the White Sox had a horrible year and had the worst record in baseball history. But from your guys' planning point, and again, I know you're new to the club, a big part of it, but you've been in this division forever as a front office executive with Kansas City as well. When you know you're not going to win a ton of games, and you go into a season and you lose 20 to 25 past that, is there a point where you sit down and say, you know, where did this plan go south on us? How did we get to this point? We only expected to be at this level. We're here now.
Yeah, I think you're always evaluating, frankly, after every game. You certainly don't want to get too in the weeds. You want to keep your eyes on the bigger picture. But certainly, it was a disappointing season. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I think from the standpoint of what we have coming and where we are as an organization, Chris's first year as a general manager last year, there was learning curves and trying to establish his vision of what he wants this organization to be. I mean, I think there's a lot of things to look forward to moving forward.
When you look at the offense of this team, and obviously not just this year, and you've only been here for 1 year, but prior to even you coming, the team hasn't been hitting the ball out of the ballpark. There isn't a laundry list of players, you know, coming in the minor leagues that are going to help that problem. You did talk about the surplus of pitching and certainly the high-ranked prospects, and whether it's guys on your major league roster or coming in the minor leagues as soon as next year. How do you fix a problem that has been part of this organization for the last couple of years offensively, knowing that you're not going to throw a whole bunch of money at it while creatively trying to manage the surplus that you have at pitching?
Yeah, I mean, I think the guys that hit the ball out of the ballpark, certainly at the free agent level, are super, super expensive, right? I mean, those upper echelon players. And I don't think we're going to be in that type of market, certainly not this offseason. There's certainly players that we have on our roster that we feel have offensive upside that we need to find about this year. And, you know, there's opportunities to move some of that surplus for bats that we feel really good about. Whether that happens remains to be seen. But I don't think we're an organization that's going to overly focus on trying to find the guys that are the three outcome type of players, right? A strikeout, a walk, or a home run. I think Chris's vision for this organization, the brand of baseball, is going to be an exciting action type oriented type of game where, you know, we try to reduce the strikeouts. We focus on pitching and defense. and you have action on the bases. And that doesn't necessarily mean home runs. Certainly everybody loves a home run, but we're talking about balls in the gap, balls down the line, extra bases. And I think that's what we're hoping to do.
Jin, you know, there's been reports out there that the analytics departments have been upgraded and increased. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, where the team is at as far as analytics go and your history with that in Kansas City as well, and how essential it is to get that dynamic going forward?
Yeah, I would say in Kansas City that we weren't known to be a big analytics driven team, but certainly R&D, analytics, whatever you want to call it, plays a big part in every decision we make. And we actually did a really good job, Dr. Daniel Mack over there, who's a VP assistant GM and a friend of mine, of pushing that department forward, adding staff, creating, you know, research projects and reports to help our staff, not only at the major league and minor league level. Certainly they had a department here that was already in place. We're going through some reorganization now where we're going to go through some specialization with our staff members and create more communication both inside that department and also throughout the organization. We're hopeful to expand, hopeful to add infrastructure, for example, Hawkeye systems, labs, lab equipment. That's what we're hoping to do over the next couple of years, but it's a process. And, you know, we certainly realize that that department is going to touch everything we do and help with our decision-making process, and obviously is super, super important.
There's been a lot of spotlight on Colson Montgomery for obvious reasons, super talented, but he struggled this year at AAA. He hit just 214. He had a high strikeout rate of, I believe, close to 29%. Right. But he just completed a very successful Arizona Fall League where he hit 313 and had an OPS of 1167, a very low strikeout-to-walk ratio, which was great to see. So what did you guys see, or what did you, was there something you had him tweak heading into Arizona Fall League that has him heading into his offseason on a much higher note?
I mean, I think there was some pressures that maybe Colson put on himself and trying to maybe make the club this year at some point. And certainly that affects players in different ways. And obviously I think after the season, he had a chance to take a breath, reset a little bit, and go into the Arizona Fall League. And he's not going to be there for a long time, and just try to finish out and get some extra at-bats against, obviously, that top competition. He's performed, obviously, well in the AFL, and we're excited to see how that translates in the offseason and in the spring. And in the spring, we're not going to put any limitations on our players, and we hope he shows up. And we know he's going to be in shape. We know he's going to be ready mentally. Looking forward to seeing what he does in the spring, and hopefully he makes us makes that decision at the end of spring very difficult for us.
White Sox Assistant General Manager Jin Wong, our guest for a few more minutes on Inside the Clubhouse. Jin, as far as the Crochet and Roberts situation, it's a great problem to have. There's
sure.
Multiple teams that want both players. If they stay on the White Sox, it's a great thing. But certainly being able to pull the trigger at the right time is going to be the charge of Chris and you guys. How would you know when it's, you know, okay, Team X has offered the top two players that we want, but they're not giving us the third one. We're not making this trade. I believe that happened at the trading deadline with a National League East team. How do you know when to pull, and how difficult is that to feel comfortable with that move, knowing you're trading possibly one of the best young pitchers in the game?
So I would say that in any scenario with any player, you have to be open to the possibility of moving that player, unless there's a contractual obligation that can't be met. So I think we just have to be open to listening, right? And with the main goal of making the organization better in the long run and short run. But I would say that those decisions aren't easy, as you well know. Chris takes the temperature of a lot of his assistants, like myself, Josh, Gene Watson, David Keller, who's now a special assistant with us. We do a lot of background on the players we're going to potentially acquire. And at the end of the day, that decision is his, but certainly he gets everyone's opinion and analytics as well. I forgot to mention them. And that decision at the end of the day is Chris's and his alone. But it's not easy. And you're trying to do the best you can at that particular time. But again, we're under no obligation to move those players. Those players are under control for 2 and 3 years respectively. We love them. They're White Sox until we decide they're not. And we have high hopes for them for 2025 and beyond. But to answer your question, not an easy decision. But once you get comfortable with it, certainly there's an opportunity to pull the trigger.
The three of us have been in and out of a lot of clubhouses, and it doesn't take a long time in there to realize what's a good clubhouse, what's a bad clubhouse, when you're talking about just the way the whole dynamic works. Fans don't want to hear it, but I will say, being in that clubhouse throughout the season this year, I saw a pretty strong group, regardless of losing streaks and records being talked about. There was a lot of strength in that clubhouse. So what did you guys learn in year one of this process together, knowing that you have to identify more free agents to add to a club that's more on the front of this rebuild than on the back, about keeping the clubhouse together and when you're identifying a new manager?
Yeah, you're right. There was no drama this year in that clubhouse, which you would have probably anticipated from the outside looking in, and I appreciate you saying that, but you're absolutely right. That's an important part of our organization, of any organization, the culture of the clubhouse, and we're trying to establish a winning type of environment. And the person that we hire as our new manager for the next seasons is going to be in charge of building that and pushing that. It's a very difficult process trying to evaluate player makeup on the free agent market and how they would interact with our players and our current mix. So that's something we all strive for, and that's something that, quite frankly, Dayton Moore, as general manager of the Kansas City for a long time, told me that, you know, when these players retire and you talk to them 5, 10 years after their careers ended, they never really reminisce about these particular moments they've had in the game. They never say they miss that. The thing they say they miss the most is the camaraderie and the relationships, and trying to establish that and create that positive environment in the clubhouse where players are going to play for each other as opposed to for themselves is obviously very, very difficult. But once you do that, then you have something special.
In the on this show, and then in my stories I write on our website, I try to let people know that White Sox have some of the brightest and best young people in the game moving forward in their front office. People don't want to hear it because there's no results right now. But how excited were you to leave a very secure job that you had been in Kansas City for many, many years to come in with this group to try to do something special in Chicago?
I mean, Kansas City was all we had known as a family, my wife and two kids, and we love Kansas City, the organization. I still love a lot of people over there, trust them with my life, quite frankly. But the opportunity to come here in this market with this organization and the history, especially with Chris, that relationship that we had had since we traded for him in Kansas City from the White Sox as a player and as one of our front office executives, there's really no better human being than Chris Getz. I trust him unequivocally, and I believe he trusts me, and he's a lot of fun to work with, and it's an opportunity to build something here from the ground up, and I think that opportunity was too attractive to me and my family.
Chin, we thank you for taking some time on this Saturday morning to talk White Sox, and good luck with the managerial search and free agency that's just right around the corner.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Have a great day. Thank you.
White Sox assistant GM Chin Wong. Before Chicago takes on Washington, tune in tomorrow from 12 to 3 for the Your Local Ford Dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's. Join Mully, Olin Krutz, and Patrick Manley as they'll get you set for the game. Then immediately following the game, Mully, Olin, and Manley will have instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Sony Pictures Wonderverse Chicago and Timber Tech Decking and Railing. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. Bruce and I have some final thoughts when we wrap
including things up. Including, can Michael Kopech strike you out or throw seven strikes in a row by you?
I look forward to having that debate when we come back on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Back on Inside the Clubhouse, Bruce, Michael Kopech was asked, as you alluded to before the break, was asked at Media Day of the World Series from Foul Territory, which is the show that A.J. Pierzynski, former White Sox catcher, is a co-host on. How many pitches could he blow by A.J. before he was able to make contact? The answer was 7. What do you think?
I'd say 10.
You got 10?
I got 10.
Oh, A.J. You're
A.J.
just
hasn't
stirring the
played
pot.
In a long time.
I thought Kopech's he wasn't trying to stir the pot. I think he was saying, look, he's been out of the game with the velocity he has. On the 7th one, he would foul it straight back. And that's when Kopech said, that's when it would worry me because I know he'd be on it. But it would take that amount of pitches to get him back in the groove.
I think if we do this to raise for some good charities, it would be a fun thing to do. Can you hit a major league pitcher throwing 100? I mean, how much would you, if you were JoJo out there with, you know, multimillionaire, how much would you pay for a charity to go up there and swing against a Michael Kopech or a Verlander or, you know, somebody throwing 103, 104 miles an hour?
I'm in. I'm in for it. I think 10 pitches, but again, you're not. There's so many simulators now that actually can throw what like Michael Kopech or Verlander throws. Like that's probably the way to do it. But in this case, let's just pretend that we can get Kopech. They have to be all fastballs, but right. I feel like that first one's coming up and in. Especially if we know, I have a relationship with Kopech. I think he'll kind of brush me off the plate a little bit, and from there I'll just be trying not to pee my pants.
So in 2010, Mark Burley took me down to the bullpen with him when he was doing his side session. And he said, I want you to stand there with a bat and watch. Don't swing it. And tell me, you know, if you think you could hit any of it. And he was throwing 88, right? And I'm going, there's no way I'm going to hit this. And on top of that, please don't hit me.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's the fear.
Right.
So is he just throwing cut fastballs at you or what?
Yeah, I mean, you know, his usual stuff. You know, never threw harder than 88. But he was just, and then he buzzed me once. And he said, wanted to see if you still had any reflexes left.
I think that's the thing. Like if a pitch comes anywhere inside, pitcher wins.
Yeah.
They take all of the...
Well, Kopech is not the guy I'd want to be facing in a charity hit-off. Okay?
Because of control problems?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. That's what I'm saying.
If he's having a bad day.
Keep in mind...
If he didn't have a good day, right?
Yeah, well...
Okay.
Keep in mind, they don't want you to make contact too. So it's a two-way street. So he's overamped. We're overamped in the batter's box. And now I don't trust his overamped over my overamped.
I think we can make millions for charity, but there would have to be an awful lot of paperwork done signing off on responsibility in case you get hit in the head and don't recover.
A lot of fun today on Inside the Clubhouse, talking just about the epic Game 1. We thank Terry Francona, the great Tito Francona, the manager of the Cincinnati Reds. It's still weird to say. Jin Wong, the assistant GM of the Chicago White Sox, all the texts, the calls. Bruce, you, Alex Kuhn behind the glass, doing his thing, making it sound good. And we will be back yet again next week. And we'll see if the World Series is over.
People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine on our website, 670thescore.com. Occasionally, starting November, watching Marquee, we'll be able to check us out a couple times a week, talking some baseball on Baseball 360. Brian, have a great week. I'm looking forward to an exciting World Series, and baseball and free agency and the GM meetings are upon us.
Let's go. It's been Inside the Clubhouse. We'll see you next week. For Bruce Levine, I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is 670 The Score. Steve Rosenblum on deck.